Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. If you haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we're going through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. Right now we're up to episode 16 of season 2. This one is called Q Who. It was directed by Rob Bowman, written by Maurice Hurley, and it aired back on May 8th, 1989. In this one, the omnipotent entity known as Q arrives on the Enterprise and decides that Captain Picard was acting in an arrogant manner. Q then sends the ship across the galaxy where the crew make first contact with the cybernetically enhanced, assimilating race known as the Borg. After the crew fail to defeat a Borg vessel, Picard is forced to beg for Q's help. This is a good one. It's an important episode. At least in my opinion, it's an important episode in this series. And I'm joined by a couple guests to talk about this one. The first guest is Clay. Clay's been here before. Everyone should be familiar with him by now. And the second guest is Sean Murphy. And Sean's making his first appearance on the podcast. Hopefully the first of a couple more, right? We'll get a couple before the series wraps up in 5 years or whenever it ends. But anyway, thank you guys for listening. And right after this break, we will get into Q Who.
You're not prepared for what awaits you.
How can we be prepared for that which we do not know? But I do know. We are ready to encounter it.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. That's why we're out here.
Oh, the arrogance. They don't have a clue as to what's out here.
They will learn. Adapt. That is their greatest advantage.
They're moving faster than expected, further than they should.
By whose calculations?
You judge yourselves against the pitiful adversaries you've encountered so far. The Romulans, the Klingons. They're nothing compared to what's waiting. Picard, you are about to move into areas of the galaxy containing wonders more incredible than you can possibly imagine, and terrors to freeze your soul. I offer myself as guide, only to be rejected out of hand.
We'll just have to do the best we can without you.
What justifies that smugness?
Not smugness, not arrogance. But we're resolute, we're determined, and your help is not required.
We'll just have to see how ready you are.
Q!
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Welcome back to the Penske Podcast. And here we are about to talk about Q Who, a pretty decent episode of Star Trek. And I am joined by two very special guests, Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good, Wes. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. And the other guest is first-time appearance from Mr. Sean Murphy. Sean, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Thank you for thanks for coming on to the podcast. Talk about Star Trek for a little bit.
I'm so thrilled to be here. I mean, usually when I do podcasts, it's about comics or something, but I'd rather talk about Star Trek.
We're going to branch out a little bit here. And Sean, we were just joking before, you're an expert because you've done some comic book work that involved the Borg, I guess, right?
Yeah, I did a one-shot comic called The Borg for IDW. You can get it on Comixology for free right now. You have to download the app. But I got to draw Picard and the Borg and a hypercube and all kinds of cool things. So I listen to the show regularly while I'm working. So it was really fun to be working on a comic, drinking from my Star Trek mug, working on a Star Trek comic, wearing a Star Trek shirt. It was awesome.
Listening to Star Trek. Yeah, so do you want to give a little break? I usually ask this. I think I asked Clay when he came on. What's your sort of history with Star Trek?
I came to it late. Like in 2008, a friend of mine introduced me, and I started with season 4 after Picard got, you know, deborged.
Right.
And seeing it from the second half first, and then I went back and watched the first half, and I was sort of... The first half's a little more difficult to get into, obviously.
Yeah.
But when I'm working, like, I'll just have Star Trek on in the background, and sometimes it's hard for me to, even though I know all the episodes very well, I sort of forget which order they're in, and it makes me go, oh, wait, is this before this guy had a beard or not?
Right.
Talk to guy yet, you know?
Yep. Now, that's a, it is sort of perfect white noise. There's a lot of YouTube videos that are just like the engine sound for like eight
yeah,
hours.
Yeah,
Someone has looped that noise and just to play and help people fall asleep, I'm assuming.
When I, I used to take what I call a Trek nap. I wish I was making this up, but I'm not. I lived in L.A. alone. I had a dog, and I would watch Star Trek, but I didn't have a couch, so I would just lay on the carpet on the floor in front of my TV, and I'd fall asleep, but the DVD would eventually go back to the menu, which would just be the Star Trek white noise, and it is perfect to fall asleep to.
It's the very first ASMR video, I think, right?
Yeah. But I don't even know how the crew's able to do anything. You think they'd all be sleeping all the time?
Yeah, well, and I mean, especially in this one, they're drinking hot chocolate, like hot milk, and that engine noise just going around, and eventually you just pass
out. Just in case
right
you're
out.
Wondering, I have hung out with Sean before, and the living room of his house is an exact replica of Ten Forward.
Oh, excellent. With the black bartender and everything. It's all perfect. Well, yeah, thank you guys for coming on. I wanted to preface this one a little bit. I'm going to talk a little bit more than I normally do before asking people's opinions, just because I consider this episode to be important in the scheme of things. And watching it again, I think it's almost more important than it is good, even though I do think it's very good.
Yeah.
The big thing here that me and Clay have talked about previously is that this really sort of it does a 180 on a lot of the problems that the first season had, and I think it's important for that regard, and basically that it fixes a lot of problems, those essentially being the fact that it finally finds something to do with their godlike beings, which we've talked about before. And it also does an about-face on Roddenberry's bizarre insistence that humanity is just better than anybody else. So what'd you guys think, basically?
You want to go first, Sean?
If I watched this for the first time ever, in, 1988 or whatever, I think I'd be thrilled, because the idea of the Borg alone is enough to hold it. But when you look back in hindsight, this is like a preview of an episode that you want to watch.
Right.
And
yeah.
Not a great episode, but the Borg alone is a great villain. And it's nice to go back to when the Borg were still good before they got too humanized.
Yep.
I like them as a sort of Doctor Who villain in a way.
Do the costumes that you drew for the Borg in the comic look better than the ones in this show?
Yeah. Well, so I had the benefit of seeing Nemesis. First Contact, and by then the Borg had a green color. Everything was sort of streamlined a little bit more. And in this one, I noticed they used a lot of yellow lights, and they had sort of that circular electricity thing behind their heads.
Right.
But a lot of the Borgs were wearing like combat sweaters, like military fatigue,
yes,
with like telephone cords strung around them.
Are you watching this on Amazon or Netflix?
Netflix.
If you watch it on Amazon, it's the like the high def resolution, and they look much worse than
I don't. I don't
ever.
Know if you guys caught it, but did you notice when Riker and Worf and Data are walking through the Borg, where the like the stasis pod area?
Yep.
They're clearly walking by like mannequins who are just been dressed in Borg costumes.
Yeah.
Luckily, I'm in the low resolution, so I was impressed by the actors not moving at all. I didn't know they were dead.
They can even hold their pulse steady at no beats per minute. It's fantastic. Yeah, it's their outfit certainly does not look fantastic in the high def resolution. It's still more interesting than anything, but I guess let's go through the Borg first to get rid of them.
This is Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
We have analyzed your defensive capabilities as being unable to withstand us. If you defend yourselves, you will be punished.
I think this show is interesting just for the fact that they sort of have the Borg, but they're not really 100% at this point.
Yeah.
They have no interest in organisms. They're only interested in the ship, which would change with Best of Both Worlds, and things would sort of pick up where it's implied in this episode that the Borg somehow give birth to like live babies who then become cyborgs.
I don't remember ever seeing that. That was kind of weird. And
that was overturned in Voyager.
Oh, was it?
I think that 7 of 9 makes mention that Borg don't give birth, they assimilate.
Ew.
So it was rare, yeah. Sorry, well, I watched Voyager 2.
No, it's fine.
The one thing I really noticed about the Borg in this episode is their whole, specifically their ship design, is really ahead of its time as far as sci-fi angry alien ship designs. Because like when they do that wide shot of the inside of the ship, it looks like The Matrix. It looks like Independence Day.
Yeah.
It's got a very what ended up being the 90s era. Well, even now they still do it. But that kind of industrial look is pretty... I feel like this is the first alien that's really done that.
Yeah, their design is certainly striking. I feel like it's sort of a 80s thing that they were coming on. If you don't know, originally the Borg design was supposed to be insects.
Really?
Yeah,
right.
But they couldn't do that for budgetary reasons, obviously, so they became cyborgs wearing combat sweaters. And I think the idea of what they were doing, like a hive mind, was fairly popular at the time. Yeah. But they're certainly the way that they present them is pretty unique. With the regenerating ship and everything like that,
right.
That seems very original to them anyway.
Yeah.
The what I actually liked about them in this that I kind of I feel like they're actually a little bit more unique in this appearance than they get later, because once they start the assimilating of the humans thing,
yep.
Then they basically kind of turn into space zombies. You know, it's the same kind of thing where, you know, anybody who touches them ends up turning into one of them, which is good to a point, but I actually really liked the idea that they were just after the machines.
Yes. Yeah. I think I agree. I don't know. I guess the assimilation thing, or I guess everything that I guess when they take technology, it's technically assimilation, but when they zombify people and turn them into Borgs,
yeah.
It adds a little bit more like the personal terror.
Right, right.
Where I don't really, if you don't have that, it seems like you could just get out of the way of the Borg and they would leave you alone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I should say I don't dislike it, but seeing it, being familiar with the other way, seeing this first version of it, it kind of struck me as being a little refreshing as a concept.
Yeah, no.
I was stunned by how well they nailed it out of the box.
Yeah.
With the Borg. So, okay, you can't have bees, fine. So if you look at some of the extra features on the Next Generation DVD sets, the way that they came up with the Borg cube, I guess the model builders were behind schedule, and it was late at night, and they had to come up with something, so they just glued together all the pieces of model kits that you usually just throw away, like all the tree stems.
Oh,
all
that's
that,
funny.
All that shit.
That's
and
awesome.
They made it into a cube, sprayed it, and that was it. And you think about like a slap together idea that ended up being very profound as far as the cube, you know, the vibe, you know, the repetitive nature of the fractal, the sort of like the fractals idea with Borgs. And
right.
it is so, you know, it's very rare when creative people throw something together and it works. And they got so much right. I mean, yeah, the baby thing and a lot of the stuff doesn't really make sense in continuity now, but I'm stunned that they got it so well. Considering the history of how it came together.
Yeah. Considering the history of, they've done two alien introductions so far, and they both went catastrophically terrible.
that's right.
I mean, the Ferengi are ridiculous. And I don't, like, it's basically the total opposite of the Borg. Like, they didn't get anything right with them.
Yeah.
And then the Romulans, they had to bring back, and they just came back and said, we're back. That's pretty much it. So.
Yeah, I have to say I'm glad that I haven't been on this for a Ferengi episode yet, because I remember even watching the show as a kid. If it was a Ferengi episode, I usually turned the channel.
Yeah, it'd be tough. It'd be, like, up there for me, the top two, just sort of bad, would be... If it's a Troy, like a Loxana Troy episode, or if it's a Ferengi episode.
Oh,
and occasionally they overlap. So,
okay, say for the record, I'm the only one who loves Loxana Troy.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I do. She does things to the ship and the crew that no other character can do. And my wife really likes her a lot, so I guess I have a soft spot for her.
Yeah, I mean, I love her work as the voice of the computer. It's always...
Oh,
it's
is
always,
that her?
Yeah, that's Majel Barrett as well.
She is kind of a piece of ass, I gotta say. I know she's like a space MILF with really dark black eyes, but she's kind of a piece.
No, in Haven, she was she's wearing this very low-cut dress, which is like surprising. It surprised me for it was being on TNG in the 80s, and that's what she was wearing. And she's a decent age at that point, too.
Well, speaking of Troy, I'd like to point out how integral to the plot Deanna Troy is in this episode.
Sure, go ahead. Make that argument.
Even to the point where we've talked previously about how Guinan basically does Troy's job, but better.
Yep.
And this is a great episode that sort of pinpoints that, because Guinan, after Q zaps Picard off the ship, Guinan has this immediate feeling that something's wrong, and she contacts the bridge.
Bridge, this is 10 forward.
Guinan? I don't remember you ever calling the bridge before.
Is everything all right?
How do you mean?
Is there anything unusual happening?
No, Guinan, nothing out of the ordinary. Why do you ask?
I'm not sure. It's just a feeling. Had it a couple of times before. It's probably nothing. Forget that I called. 10 forward out.
And they find out that Picard's not there. And then, as soon as that happened, I was like, why isn't Troy doing this? This is the only thing she's supposed to do.
Right.
Is notice this stuff. And then after all that, Troy kind of comes wandering in like she just woke up. And it, like she's just late to class or something.
Yeah. And yeah, she asks about where Picard went. But, yeah. I mean, to time.
Apparently, the captain can disappear along with the space shuttle for an hour, and somebody has to ask, hey, where's the captain? And it takes them another 20 minutes to figure it out.
It's the same with, wasn't anyone standing next to the shuttle? Like, I just imagine people are always in these shuttle bays, so why did it take that long for these things to be gone missing?
Yeah.
I feel like Chief O'Brien should have been all over that shit.
Yeah, he was a little bit limited in this role. I was a little bit disappointed with his what he did in here, especially, after the last couple episodes where he's been like drinking with Riker and everything. It's funny you brought up Guinan. I think this is the first episode that implies Guinan has extra human abilities.
You mean
her kung fu grip?
Yeah, from that potential magic fight they set up.
Oh, I wanted to see her Hadouken the shit out of Q.
Take him
Get
down.
Over here.
If they had Guinan and Q in their magic poses and combined them with Picard and Riker in their phaser stances, that would have been a hell of an episode.
And Riker's leg would be swinging over all of it.
just battling like endless swarms of Borg as they march toward them, and they're just like, you know, back to back in a circle, just fighting out everything. But yeah, I don't. Is this episode supposed to imply that she can resist Q?
I don't know. I just took it as they were familiar with each other as like a species or something. Resist him how?
Well, she put up her hands.
Sexually?
No, well, she put up her hands like she was going to like do a Sidious like forced lightning absorb or something, you know, and it felt like she was not intimidated by, cause he could basically kill you, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, they sort of touched on that. I don't think they had her quite figured out, fleshed out yet.
Mm.
It seemed like she could have, he was so slightly intimidated by her. You think they'd get along, because she likes to listen and he likes to talk. So.
Right.
Got a bar there, got some drinks, what's the problem?
It's fascinating. It is such a, I guess while we're talking about Q, I did just want to, I think this is, like I was saying in the earlier thing, this is the show getting something right. We can start that with Q, where Clay, we've been talking about how the godlike beings previously have been, you know, they flooded, TOS. They're in this one. I wrote down a couple of their names. There's Trelane, Nagilum, Armus, Charlie X. There's a whole bunch. And Q started the show in that same vein where they're basically, the show gives you this omnipotent being that can do anything. And he basically wants to do parlor tricks.
Yeah.
He wants to like turn people into pig creatures. He wants to make people disappear, things like that. And what they did with Q here and what they would continue to do with him is actually make him something of a moral force, which is, you know, if you go through pretty much any religion, if you have omnipotent powers, you're basically seen as a force of morality.
Mm.
And it's interesting here that Q, they managed to keep Q being a trickster figure, but he also sort of teaches people a lesson.
Mm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so this whole thing starts when he asks Picard, you know, are you ready? And Picard says, yes, we think we're reasonably ready to go out and try to take on anything, which I think is still true at the end of the episode. But Q thinks that that's arrogant, so he flings them on this Borg adventure to show humans that they're not ready.
Yep.
And in the end, when Picard says, "Hey, thanks for teaching us that lesson," what do you mean? All you said was that you were ready. You have a fucking awesome spaceship, phasers everywhere. Like, you look fucking ready.
See,
I didn't understand what he really was taught. I was kind of
reading the episode a little bit differently. And I think I have to ask a question of you guys. Do you think that Q is afraid of the Borg?
No.
Okay. Because I was kind of reading it as though he was presenting the Enterprise to the Borg out of, like, because he, you know, like, he was afraid of the Borg, so he was putting them in front of them at, because the thing that we learn usually from Q is that, despite what he does to Picard and the Enterprise, the reason he does it is kind of because he believes in them.
Yes.
So I was kind of thinking, oh, is he actually putting them in this place because he thinks that they out of anyone can defeat the Borg?
No, you're way wrong.
Hey man, I just picked up the subtext that you guys clearly missed.
I'm turning down your mic feed now, Clay. That was enough. What I think is fascinating about this one is that I think you could make an argument that Q did this to save humanity. You know, Picard basically says that at the end of the episode.
Right.
Which I think is, let me see how I want to explain this.
I just want to say that's kind of what I mean in that, like, he's introducing the Borg to them so he can say, like, look, this shit is coming and you have to be ready for it.
Right.
But the way he does it is in that trickster mindset where I agree he's doing it as a, response to their arrogance, but he's also doing it to prepare them.
Yes, I'd agree with that. And I think what's kind of shocking about this one is, Sean, you probably haven't been watching all the first and second season episodes so far, I'm assuming.
I've seen them all, but I haven't been watching them in order.
I think this episode gains a lot if you watch them in order, because I had never watched the series in order prior to this little podcast that we're doing. I had always watched them out of order, sort of scattershot. And if you watch this one out of order, Q or Picard and the crew don't seem nearly as cocky as they do when you watch it in order of what they've, the things that have come out.
Hmm.
They've spent the entire first and most of the second season basically being racist towards just saying, like, humanity is the best. Like, every species they encounter, humanity is always better than that species. And their cockiness here with Q, the first time I've ever noticed it where they were actually wrong. And I've never watched this episode and felt that they were wrong before. And
yeah.
it's a nice change. And I think it's just, once you've watched all these terrible first season episodes that are just so heavy handed about, like, the neutral zone, like, even old humans are the worst people in the world. to get this one where Q puts them in their place is a nice little change of pace.
But I don't think I agree that he maybe helped them by sort of introducing them to what is a virus so they can build a tolerance to fight it later on. But I don't know if he, humbled them necessarily. I didn't think they were being that arrogant when they say, yeah, we're ready. I mean, we're as ready as we can be. But I don't think, but I see what your point is. If they're walking around the first two seasons thinking that humans are the best and we can fight everything and we're the most powerful force in the galaxy, then that definitely needs to be taken down a notch.
Yeah.
But in the context of this episode, I didn't get it. But, you know, I have all the other episodes to come in my head, too.
Yeah.
So I'm probably not seeing that before.
I agree with what you said earlier, Sean. I think this is kind of, this episode feels like a trailer for an episode that you really want to see, or to something, you said something to that effect. Like, yeah. 'Cause I don't feel like the,
which it really is, you know.
Yeah,
this is best of both worlds prequel.
I feel like it's very rushed towards the end, as a lot of these episodes seem to be.
Sorry, Clay, to interrupt, but I think the biggest problem with this episode is that the structure is bad.
It takes
way too long to get Q to transport them into this other part of the galaxy. is basically the first two acts that really nothing happens.
Right.
And then they meet the Borg, and I'm fine only getting a glimpse of the Borg, you know, but I feel like they could have been in that other part of the galaxy sort of like dicking around or something for some reason. And, and basically what happens is they get there and then the Borg immediately appear. And maybe a little bit more explanation about like, oh, all these planets are devastated and stuff, like everything's gone out here.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be it. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Well, I was just thinking that I feel like the end is, I don't know, like it doesn't, when Picard turns to Q and he's like, fine, you're better than we are, we're all dumb, we need your help. Like, it feels very, like he even says, we're all really scared here. But it's like, you don't really get any sense from the crew or anything that they are
actually
scared. They have recognized that this is an unbeatable opponent. You know what I mean?
Right. I think that's all pacing. It's just bad.
Yeah, I think maybe they could have trimmed back some of those scenes where Geordi is putting the moves on the new girl.
Yes.
No, he wasn't. That's the thing, is he should have been, because he'd be lucky to tap that. He really is blind. And she's the girl from Total Recall who had three boobs, by the way.
Yep. Is she really?
Yeah, she is.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's... So, is her name Sonya?
It's all one universe, everyone.
This is the linchpin episode. This links everything. Yeah, I mean, just it goes into bad pacing. She is so present in this episode that you have to think by the end she's going to fix the problem.
Well, I thought at the very least she was going to die. You know, like, because I was thinking, oh, well, clearly this is going to be the first person that the Borg assimilate.
Right, yeah. Right.
But she just disappears.
Yeah, you would have
thought.
It'd
be weird to see a Borg with three boobs, though.
I thought she was, yeah, she was going to go the same route as the, as when the first Borg appears in engineering and Picard's like, Worf, take care of it. And Worf just goes, Ensign, take care of it. And he goes over and just promptly gets his shit packed in.
I would like to say, just because I found this amusing, I was, I'm at my parents' house for the weekend and I was watching this downstairs and my mother doesn't watch Star Trek, but she happened to be in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And she came in at the point where where Worf and Riker come in and Q refers to Worf as Microbrain.
Yeah.
And she turned to me and goes, what's the name of the actor who plays Microbrain?
Is she familiar with Michael Dorn's work outside of Star Trek?
No, she just...
The right answer is LeVar Burton.
Yes.
She just assumed that the character's name was Microbrain.
Yeah.
So I can't really blame her.
Yeah, Q... Worf does not respond well to Q. He had to be excused from the action here. Picard just told him to go stand outside.
And how often does Worf... ready to pounce like a pit bull, and Picard's like, Lieutenant Worf, but he like gets him to back off. Yeah. This guy's just, I mean, I like Worf, but I told Clay this, he's a badass written by nerds, so I'm not sure Worf is always as convincing as he could be.
Mm,
nor
yes.
Has Michael Dorn ever take a freaking karate class in his whole life.
I know. It's,
but especially this one when he's like, you know, he's given an order to take care of it and he palms it off to some red shirt behind him who just gets slapped down.
Oh, yeah. I love that. When he's like, Mr. Worf, take care of this. And he just like taps the other guy because he doesn't want anything.
Sends
to
him in.
It.
Nothing comes of it. And then he just, yeah, he shoots him. He doesn't shoot the Borg well enough. And then he turns up the phaser and lights him up. It's, yep. Yeah, I don't think. I think that's a pretty good point, that Worf is basically a badass written by nerds, and he really doesn't get the chance to shine as much as he could.
Until he gets that awesome quad-bladed weapon in his hands.
Yeah.
Batleth?
Yeah, there we go, Batleth. I'm losing my cred remembering that.
Here,
Jesus, guys.
Oh, boy. It's time to sign it off. Yeah, I just...
Well, I have a question about what you guys think. I mean, do you think that because... Now, Q introduced them to the Borg, but... I think there's something at the end where the Borg now advance faster towards the humans because they've had a taste of the humans.
Yes.
So did he exactly do them a favor? I mean, would you want to know about this space virus if it meant catching it? Is it really a helpful thing he did? You know?
Go ahead, Clay.
Well, I was just going to say, does Guinan say something? I mean, she mentions that, but does she also mention the flip side about, maybe if they hadn't come in contact by the time that they did, humans would be advanced enough to take care of them or something like that?
Well, she implied that Yeah, that was kind of the implication, that if humans could somehow develop enough to interact with the Borg and get along with them, which doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense.
So, well, regardless, so clearly the implication there is that it's not a good thing, but Picard reacts to it as though it kind of is.
Yes. I mean, I think in the context of the episode, Q did everyone a favor here.
Yeah.
The 18 people that died.
No, whatever Q says about that, if you're going to get burnt in the kitchen or whatever the hell his line is, like you have to go back if you're going to be scared about getting a bloody nose. If you want to go outside this series, Q definitely did them a favor because Enterprise has an episode that implies that tells you that the Borg ship that this episode dealt with was on its way to Earth.
Oh, okay.
In Enterprise, what happens is in First Contact, when they blow up the ship in Earth's orbit before they go back in time,
right?
A couple shuttle pods of Borgs crash landed in the Arctic and were frozen.
Ooh, I remember this episode.
This is the episode with Kurt Russell, right?
Yeah, right. And they thawed out the Borg in Enterprise, and the Borg started to they stole a spaceship and started to like turn it into a Borg ship as the Enterprise was trying to deal with them. Mm-hmm. And before the Borg ship was blown up in the Enterprise episode, they sent a message to the Gamma Quadrant or the Delta Quadrant or whatever, just saying like basically a Borg SOS. So that implies that the ship that this Enterprise bumps into is actually on its way to Earth to respond to that distress call from the past.
Yeah. That definitely makes Q, a good guy in some sense.
Yeah. I think he's still a good guy in terms of just this episode standing by itself. It ties in with like the Tapestry episode. Do you guys know that one?
Right. Yeah, that was impressive. Wait, I'm thinking of the next episode. Sorry, I went ahead.
Tapestry is the one where Picard's heart fails and Q says that he's in the afterlife and he gives Picard a chance to relive his life, without getting his artificial heart. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of thing there. It's him giving people a chance to do something and also showing them how it might be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I prefer it to him turning people into pig people, basically.
Yeah. What I'm curious about is, Guinan apparently has knowledge of these really, really horrible aliens called the Borg. Never spoke up about it before. Never hit the brakes, never hit the alarm. And if I was Picard, I'd be like, hey, Guinan, in the future, do you get any secret messages or whatever about the aliens we're going to run into? Like, we are all ears. You know?
Oh, man, honestly.
Don't be shy. We're listening.
That would have been an unbelievable ending if that last scene was Picard just totally dressing down Guinan and be like, you got to speak up about this shit in the future.
After the end when Picard's sitting in his chair, he just gets up quiet. They do that really cool shot that, Bowman did when Picard steps into the turbo lift and ends up in the shuttlecraft with Q. That sort of tracking, low tracking shot.
Yeah. This is a Rob Bowman episode?
It is, yeah.
Oh, man, I should have known because it seems better directed than a lot of the other ones.
Yes.
Yeah, there was definitely Steadicam in that one shot. It was super dramatic.
It should have just been 30 seconds of that tracking Picard all the way to 10 forward where he just starts yelling at her. But the Trek, early Trek has done that a couple times. Clay, you remember in Outrageous O'Connor? O'Connor knows exactly what's going on and he refuses to give Picard information.
Yeah.
And it's like, If people would just speak up, things would go a lot faster here, you know?
I don't remember much of that episode other than O'Connor's manly musk.
Yeah, well, it's overpowering to the point of Picard doesn't just ask him for some goddamn advice about what the fuck to do with these people who seem after him.
Captain's log supplemental. We have been attacked without provocation by an alien race which Guinan calls the Borg. It appears that we have neutralized their vessel. Commander Riker is leading an away team in an attempt to learn more about them.
Yeah, so what's your guys' sort of general take on this episode? It sounds like you're a little, I don't want to say negative, but it sounds like you're a little bit, like what problems did you have with it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I just think it's, I agree with you, Wes. I think there's a structural problem and it feels like such a tease that doesn't have a satisfying end.
Yeah.
Because it's so easily turned around. Like, there's, like I was saying before, the thing that makes Q reverse what's going on is so shallow, and there's not even like any sort of heavy back and forth after that where Q's like, or maybe there isn't, I just blocked it out, where Q's like gets in their face and really drives home what they just witnessed. Like, you know what I mean? There's no.
I agree with that. I feel Q leaves too quickly in this. Like, after he sends them back, he basically just takes off.
Yeah.
And I felt he should have had a speech there about it, like what he had done.
Right.
He doesn't really.
And that if the point of the episode and the point of the story that Q puts them on is to drive home this element of fear to like knock them down a peg, I don't think it does it very well.
Yeah.
Because even at the point when Q shows up again, this is another reason why I think I felt like maybe Q was positioning them to fight the Borg because he thinks that Picard and the Enterprise can do it, can defeat them.
Yep.
Is because they were ready to blow their own ship up because their shields were down and they were going to launch torpedoes. And Data or someone says, if we launch torpedoes here and they blow up, they're going to the explosion will destroy us.
Right. Yep.
And Picard just is like, do it anyway. And that's when Q shows up and you know everything goes back. And it, like, at that point, I think you were saying earlier, Sean, they didn't learn anything. They're still acting on hubris and arrogance. And sending them back just because they shallowly ask for Q's help, it doesn't really accomplish anything story-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with all that. I would have gotten rid of the subplot with Geordi and that girl at the beginning. I would have done what Wes said.
Or pushed it further, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, there's...
Yeah, and then, I would have gotten them flung out into the Delta Quadrant much faster, and then had Q had more of, sort of explain why he's doing this, and then have, you know, definitely make it more of an attack, up the odds, make it more severe that the Enterprise is really in trouble instead of just telling them. Because they did that thing where they explained and didn't show it.
Right.
Right.
Q tells them, you're gonna run out of gas, you're gonna get hunted down. And like, that's nice to know, but we need to see that and feel that, not just have it explained to us by a trickster.
Yeah, it's true. And it's also tough to not see any of the dead 18 people.
Mm.
You know, like...
Well, yeah.
One of the things that I noticed was, they say that those 18 people, I think they refer to them as missing.
Yes.
So I was expecting them to show up as Borg.
Oh, yeah.
I just assumed, like, you know, whatever the thing that attacked the ship was,
stole
the bodies, and they were going to find them on the Borg ship, or even if they couldn't pick up the life forms on the ship, maybe they were already Borg on the ship. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I think
I think missed opportunity.
He just said, it's pre. Like, I don't think the writers at this point knew that the Borg would do that. It would take people, which is what we were talking about. And then I think Worf just says missing as a sort of, I can't confirm they're dead, but they're not on the ship kind of thing.
Well, the line is so funny because it's so bad that these 18 people, because Picard thinks that they're killed or dead. And Worf at one point, he's holding like a file, a manila envelope. He's like, wow, I have the names of the blah, 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 blah. And Picard's like, nah, we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even acknowledge these people. Not even a moment of silence.
I was wondering what Worf wanted to do. Like, do they make a public announcement over the loudspeaker or something? Is that what he wanted to do? Or did they just...
They were going to play a Coldplay song and just stream their names over the screen and 10 forward so everyone could have a moment of silence.
Yeah, it was a little bit strange. Before I lose it, I just wanted to say that, like in the Royale Clay, where I was saying that the show escapes the holodeck problem by admitting that the source material is weak.
Right.
And I think that's a really good idea, and it's how you get around the problem of nothing being good, mm-hmm. sort of, which is interesting for a genre show. I think here, we've always had the problem of these early episodes tend to have this problem of the resolution comes in the last 5 minutes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And nothing that the show has done is built up towards that.
Right.
I think what they did here is the same thing that they did in the Royale, and they made that work, where Picard having to eat humble pie and accept that he needs Q to help him causes that sort of rapid resolution that doesn't really work, but in this case it does work because that's the whole point of what they're doing.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It's funny you should say that because I actually felt like structurally, I don't know, there's something about it felt similar to the Royale to me. maybe it was Worf's gambling addiction.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's something about, if it's about Picard eating humble pie though, I don't think, like I said before, I don't think they lean on it as hard as they should.
Right. I totally agree with that. I think the episode, that's what the episode wants you to think. They just don't spend enough time with it.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why Picard is supposed to feel guilty. I mean, he's got the best ship that humans can build, and he's doing the best he can. He's got, you know, I mean, he's as accomplished as you get.
What?
What more for him to say, oh, I guess I need an omnipotent being? Like, yeah, don't we all?
Well, I'd put this as my counterpoint, because the show had this in the episode where Q offers Riker his powers and Riker declines it. There's a certain – Picard and company are always claiming that they just want to learn about the universe. There's no way that you can say that Q isn't the best way to do that. You know? Yeah. He's – their arrogance, just because they don't like Q, that they won't let him sort of like show them the wonders of the universe – and it's pure arrogance that they just are like, no, we'll do it ourselves. Like, we don't like you, basically. Mm.
They had kind of a bad start with Q. I mean, I'm not sure it's easy to forget when you're put on trial for humanity or whatever.
It's true. But it's the same problem with the episode where the Riker gets the Q powers. The show makes a terrible argument as to why Riker would turn down the ability to basically cure all diseases and suffering in the world.
Yeah.
Like... just because they're like, no, we're humans. We go our own way. And yeah. Riker was in that episode considering not saving a child from being crushed by rubble because they think that humanity is better than what Q is.
Was that child Wesley?
No, unfortunately. It was a small, small girl. Wesley was all right.
If you have a holodeck, like they are Q in the holodeck. They are omnipotent inside the holodeck. So they have a little bit of a taste of that. I mean, what would you do as Q? Well, you would, you know, bang a bunch of gals in one big orgy.
Yeah, you could
do that on the holodeck, and I'm sure Riker does.
But at least,
that has to clean the holodeck.
Yeah, with Q, the cleanup's a little bit easier. Just like he cleaned up Picard's coffee stain. You just gotta run your hand over things.
Yeah, so... the entire inclusion of that girl on the ship just for that one special effect of Q wiping away a stain? Because I really think there could have been easier ways to do that.
She returns. She's in another episode.
Yeah, in the next one, she's in there too with Geordi again.
She's a dead fish compared to O'Brien is the problem. O'Brien is just shitting on everybody else who comes in as a supporting player. Except for Guinan. Guinan's very good too.
What's the deal with the hot chocolate? When Geordi's like, you want to have it in here? Like, what? Are these electronics not waterproof? Scotch guard at this?
Well, Sean, every time the console has a chance, it explodes. So you know there's no circuit breakers whatsoever on the Enterprise.
But I was thinking the same thing, because everything is touchscreen, so there's no, like, keys that can get gummed up. You'd think by the 24th century they could figure out how to make things water resistant.
But yeah. I thought
or
it was interesting.
They would just beam the hot chocolate into their faces.
Yeah, just into their stomachs. Like, why do you even need to eat anything? Why is there even a replicator in engineering? That seems like a bad place to have a replicator.
Well, it's because if you're down there and you lose your screwdriver, you just go over and you get
I guess that's true, yeah.
What you were saying about the structure, Wes, I think they could have solved a lot of problems and had, well, maybe not solved problems, but I think they would have had a lot more time to work with if they had just lost that initial thing where Q takes Picard off the ship.
Yes. Yeah.
Like you were saying, why don't they just show up in that section? Like, there have been other episodes, and I think there will be other episodes where crazy things just happen.
Yes.
And then they find out that Q's behind it.
Well, I mean,
Why not just have the ship miraculously end up 800,000 light years out of the correct position and then have Q show up and, you know, have everything going and save yourself 15 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you were pitching this story and, you know, I think a better pitch would be in the teaser, Q appears, Picard angers him and Q sends them 7,000 light years into somewhere where they've never been. And then we go to the credits. This one, you would pitch it as Picard gets coffee or hot chocolate spilled on him, and he goes to go change his uniform, and then we roll credits. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, why would you not set the show up with them getting shot off into space?
Okay, so there's going to be 10 minutes of Geordi talking to a character we've never seen before.
In a very asexual manner. He's not and particularly interested in her.
Picard is going to get hot chocolates poured all down the front of his shirt.
Stay with me.
And then we're going to track him as he walks down a hallway. And then he's going to take the power lift. Hold on. I know. Don't get ahead of me. And then Q shows up.
I can smell the Emmys. You know, I can smell.
Who's going to play this woman? Have you seen Total Recall?
I just saw the best movie, guys.
What does he say when Picard gets that shit spilled on him and she's like, it's all over you, Captain? He goes, yes, Ensign. It is all over me.
And Geordi tries to be a gentleman. He's like, oh, sorry, it's my fault. And he's like, yes, indeed. Like, why don't you lighten up, asshole? It's not Geordi's fault you don't have hair.
Geordi was doing some fine, like, mime acting behind her, like, where he's being exasperated, just sort of with, like, hands on his hips, like, oh, boy, I can't believe this is happening again.
Yeah.
That was actually a great example of my favorite thing watching the show, which is how Patrick Stewart does his little reactions to shit.
Yeah.
Like, anytime he comes in contact with, like, a subordinate, it's always this reaction of, what the hell is this person doing even near me, let alone spilling chocolate on me?
Right. He didn't, it was funny because he didn't know her name. So he's like, Ensign, and I realized, yeah, they don't have name tags, do they?
No,
yeah.
Which is
they're
weird.
Just supposed to know. I mean, you think that this is the best of humanity and everybody just loves everyone and they all know each other's names, but apparently it's not true.
Ensign friend.
Yeah, it's the other thing I told Clay before. There's a, it's also sort of funny on this show that everyone you run into is an officer. And there are very little unenlisted crew members. Like, O'Brien's the only unlisted crew member. And at this point, they consider him a lieutenant or something, but he's not really.
Right.
The next show that they do should take place all in, like, the bowels of the ship where all the non-commissioned guys are.
They do have that episode in season 7.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, where it's told through the eyes of four lower crew members. And you sort of... The other cast are sort of in the background of the show.
Yeah. That's a really, really good one. That's one of the standouts of the last season, which is not the best season.
No, it's not.
Really one. I was going to say, that seems like the point where they clearly ran out of ideas, but if it's a good one, I'll take your word for it.
The show definitely ran out of ideas at that point, but that's the kind of show you can only do in the last season of a show.
Right.
And it's really good. It's interesting. So
I did some research. So the lady who has three boobs... Go back to that. So I went and they had an interview with her, and she said that when she showed up to do Total Recall, she had no idea what she was going to be doing, and she started crying as they started filming.
Oh, no.
But, so I'm like, okay, are the two side boobs your boobs and the one in the middle's a prosthetic?
I like that you focused on her emotional well-being and not which boobs.
No. She's an actress. She's empty to me. All of it was a prosthetic, and she was crying, and I'm thinking, well, why are you crying? It's a plastic thing, and you're not really being asked to get, you know, and then she was complaining about Schwarzenegger being creepy, and,
really?
That was in my research for this podcast.
That seems totally unlike Arnold Schwarzenegger to be untoward a woman there. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're dealing with gentlemen like Geordi, and then you've got Arnold on the other hand, it's just kind of a culture shock.
It's totally
let me pour my chocolate on you.
is all over you. I can, let's go change your uniform.
Geordi. Lieutenant.
It's okay. Go on.
Whatever is out here, we're going to be the first humans to see it. And I want to be a part of that. I want to understand it.
Sonya, relax. You're here. You've made it. But you won't last long banging into walls. It'll be there for you. Believe me.
Okay.
Jeez. Yeah, that first scene, if you listen to it without watching, it could be a porn transcript.
It could be, yeah.
Well, I was thinking, I was really hoping that Riker was going to swing in at some point. Because clearly, once she gets her eyes on Riker... Geordi will be in her rearview mirror.
Yeah, yeah. They haven't.
How does Riker not already? I mean, you know, he probably already made out with her at least.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's not sure. He didn't know Picard was missing because he's constantly Googling the ship to see if there's any new ladies on board.
Enterprise Facebook
updates her Facebook. Riker's all over.
In the first scene, if you see him like crouching behind a console, like when is Geordi going to be done talking to her?
Oh man, I was going to spill chocolate down the front of her shirt. Damn it!
He looks longingly at his cup of hot chocolate. He doesn't know what to do with now.
He's like, "Hey, what's is that warp core converter out of the way?" She goes, "What?" Turns around, and drops a couple pills in her hot chocolate. He's like, "There you go." That's exactly
Sean,
what we need.
Yeah, you've told me in the past you don't like Jonathan Frakes, right?
I like him better in these first seasons, but I feel like he gets a little creepy later on.
Really?
From the way he sits down to the way he's always hitting on anything that moves, I feel like a couple of points, his philandering gets the crew into deep shit, and I feel like Picard would have been like, hey, number one, you want to keep it in your fucking pants for a while? Like, are we going to meet aliens that you haven't fucked at some point?
That's true. I think Riker is a revelation of the early seasons. Just like you were saying that they nailed the Borg, Riker's the only character that they nailed from the get-go. Which is interesting.
Well, what's great is Frakes decided to put on all this weight, so they had to hoist him into a girder every day after season three. And they never actually told the writers that he's put on Val Kilmer weight. So then you have seasons in episode six where characters meet him like, oh, you must be Riker. I can recognize your steely blue eyes and your chiseled jaw. I'm like, are you fucking looking at Riker right now? Like, are all the writers of this show locked in a room back in 1988 where Riker is still thin?
The shadow you're casting is just huge.
We need more lights. We need more lights in this scene.
It's like Riker who ate Val Kilmer.
I actually thought he's got very little to do in this episode.
Yeah, he does.
But I thought, I don't remember him being bad in the later seasons, but because the only thing I have in my mind right now are these early ones I've been watching.
Yeah.
But I can see why, you know, might not be the greatest actor, et cetera, but I think he nails it when he has to. And there's a certain line, I should have written it down, but it's like the one big one-liner he gets in this episode.
Uh-huh.
He just really drops into it. It's like, yeah, that's, yeah. He nails that. I mean, he's good at that stuff.
Yes.
In his own words, he was saying like he hated doing the techno babble. Because he could not remember his lines. There's one season where he's talking to a Ferengi and trying to show the Ferengi how to use his computer. And the script was literally on the computer and he was reading his lines because he couldn't remember the typo, dinky dry, whatever the hell he was saying. But LeVar Burton had an unnatural ability to be able to say those, you know, scientific mumbo jumbo. And that's why they made him
engineered. That's all it takes to become an engineer, though. Like, you sound great. The, O'Brien is also excellent at it. Because he occasionally just has episodes where he comes in and says absolute nonsense, and they're like, "Thank you, O'Brien," and he leaves. That's
you know, I find him and Guinan interesting because while I appreciate that they are fleshing out the peripheral members of the cast and of the ship to give it more life, both of those characters really feel like. These characters should take the place of two of the other characters who are in the main cast.
They got much better.
Take that further and to make it racial.
Absolutely, that's what this show is all about.
All right, so get rid of Geordi because he sucks, and give it to what's his name?
O'Brien.
Yeah, O'Brien. But all right, then you got rid of a black character, and you can't do that. Even in space, there's equal opportunity.
Yep.
But if you fire Troy and then hire Guinan, and she sits in the chair and just puts on a different hat. Then, you know.
Literally.
I mean, then you've got your black character, and the show can go on, and Guinan's mom will have to be Roddenberry's wife. And that'll be a whole other episode.
Yeah, it's... So you don't like Geordi at all, Sean, huh?
I'm not a Geordi fan.
Do you think that's Burton, or that's just that they are bad at writing the engineer?
I think... I'm not a big Burton fan. Okay. I don't... when you see him interviewed and behind-the-scenes stuff, he's so passionate, but he's overly passionate where it just starts to feel sticky to me.
I
get that they need a techno guy of some kind there.
Yep. LeVar Burton had one of the greatest humble brags of all time that started that whole thing. Where, I don't know if you got a humble brag for people who don't know is basically a thing on Twitter where you brag about something, but you do it in a very humble way. Like, oh, I have so, it's so difficult counting all my money, basically, would be like a humble brag. He had one where he took a, his tweet just said, it's a beautiful, beautiful full moon in LA. And he took a picture looking out a window, but his mantle is in the shot and it is lined with Emmys.
Oh, asshole. So if you look at the, behind the scenes stuff, there's one that he's doing an interview. And he was talking about Geordi and Data being very connected. And they were going to go with this idea at the beginning called, they're the duo called the Perceivers or something like that. And Roddenberry wanted it so that because Geordi was blind.
Right.
And handicapped, and Data was emotionally handicapped. They had this connection. And when the actors started doing their first lines together, they were doing some quick script called the Perceivers. And Geordi loved that idea so much, and he was so upset that they took it out. And the more he describes this idea, the more horrible it sounds. It's like, oh, God, LeVar Burton, you don't know what you're talking about. And then he goes into this rant about how his eyes are his most emotive feature, and it was such a shame that they covered it up with a barrette.
Yes, in the 80s.
I don't want to see your creepy eyes, man. Like, later on, when you get, like, Marilyn Manson eyes, that's scary.
It was. That was such a letdown in the movies when they did that. I don't understand. I mean, I guess it's just for him and they can hype it up or whatever. But yeah, he always has a story of hearing from some blind member of the fandom who liked the show and wrote in and was just so happy that there was a blind character on and made him change his mind. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I always found it funny that I don't know how much time is supposed to have passed between the end of the show and first contact, but they made drastic advances in the eye technology between the end of the show and first contact.
Well, what was
where first it was visors and then, you know what? Actually, we can just replace your entire eye now.
Yeah. Well, there was an episode. Oh, I forget which one it is. It's in the second season, where there's a weird, totally nonsensical scene where Geordi's in the med bay with Pulaski and she mentions the fact that she can give him cybernetic eyes and he would not need his visor. And he leaves it just going, I'll think about it. And they never talk about it again.
Interesting.
Well, that kind of covers it in a way.
Yeah.
If he's aware and he just doesn't want to.
Right.
I mean, he's on a government military salary. He probably can't afford them.
Not military. We don't say the M word on the Enterprise.
Sorry.
They don't get paid either.
He's on
right?
a government cruise ship salary. He probably can't afford them.
That's true.
I'd assume not. That's fascinating. Well, we're almost at an hour, so let's wrap up with our final thoughts, shall we?
Where's your stubbornness now, Picard? Your arrogance? Do you still profess to be prepared for what awaits you?
The Borg ship is reestablishing its tractor beam.
Lock on photon torpedoes.
Yes, sir.
Without our shields, at this range, there is a high degree of probability that a photon detonation could destroy the Enterprise.
Prepare to fire.
I'll be leaving now. You thought you could handle it. So handle it.
Q. End this.
Moi? What makes you think I'm either inclined or capable to terminate this encounter?
If we all die here, now, you will not be able to gloat. You wanted to frighten us. We're frightened. You wanted to show us that we were inadequate. For the moment, I grant that. You wanted me to say, I need you? I need you!
Sean, I don't know if you know, I rank these things on a scale of 1 to 5. And for everyone out there, I'm just going to quickly go over my ranking. A 3 is like a decent average episode of Star Trek. A 4 is the dividing line where you would show it to a non-Trek fan and think that they might enjoy it. A 5 is a classic. 1 is an episode I never need to see again, and a 2 is an okay to decent episode with some serious problems in it. So
I put 2.5 on this one.
You go 2.5?
I love the Borg. The Borg are great, and that's probably what saves it, but this is pretty much the only thing to salvage here.
Interesting, interesting. Clay?
Yeah, I would say a 3, just because I don't think you could show this just... I think it's a tough one to show to someone who's not familiar with Star Trek and have them be into it. Well,
yep.
if the barometer is my mother, then it failed miserably.
Right.
And also, I want to give it a 3 just to be half a point higher than Sean.
Sure, absolutely. I'm going to be the outlier here then. I thought a lot about this episode. I've been thinking about it a lot leading up to this. I consider this a turning point episode. I think it has big structural problems. I think it does not really nail what it's trying to say, but what it's trying to say is interesting enough to me, and it's totally different from pretty much the dregs that we've been watching up until this point. I consider this episode to be a 5.
Ooh.
It's a flawed 5.
Well, that's interesting, because I feel like...
And it's about a 5.
I feel like one of the things that you said earlier, though, is that if you watch it out of continuity, that it loses a lot of impact. And I feel like to have a 5, you would need to be able to watch it out of continuity and have it have that impact.
What do you mean, out of continuity?
Well, I mean, like, you were saying, if you watch this episode without having watched them in order,
okay.
If you were to just cherry pick this episode, it kind of loses some of its effectiveness because of what's come before it.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to make you change your numbering, but I think that's an interesting rating for this one.
Sure. Well, I guess I have to explain that my rating system is really, it's more about the sentence than the number. Does that make sense? Like, a 4 would be an episode that I could really show to someone and expect them to think it's great. Mm-hmm. A 5 is sort of what I would consider a classic.
Okay, all right. I see what you're saying.
Yep. So my rating system doesn't really make sense in the fact that a 3 might not always be more of a favorite to me than a 2, but mm-hmm. a 2 is just an episode with a lot of problems in it.
I don't think
this one has problems that affect my enjoyment of it, and I would show it to somebody, and I also think it's important enough to be the top tier.
Yeah, I buy that. I think you're right in that if you're judging it just on its own, I would give it a 3.
Okay, I agree with that.
I would also agree with you that this is the first, at least from the ones that I've watched, it's the first real step towards what it ends up becoming. You know, like this is the villain that lands hard and hits the ground running.
Right.
This is the, you know, you bring Q back and have him be very effective. You've got a lot of, you've opened tons and tons of doors for to go down this, later on.
This is the first theme that I could actually think about and come up with multiple ways to justify a lot of interpretations. You know,
except apparently that Q is afraid of the Borg.
Except for that,
which neither of you think is a valid opinion.
Totally wrong. But
so this will be my last podcast.
I think we should kick Wes off of his own podcast for not knowing what a 5 is. No, I mean I get the spirit of what you're saying, Wes, and it is a milestone. I think a Trekkie has to watch it because it includes the Borg. I just have a hard time giving it a 5 when I would give Tapestry a 5. You know, like for me, a 5 would be no asterisks on the end, no footnote.
Yes, I'd agree. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
But I understand your scale, though. I know what you're saying.
Sure. Well, thank you for endorsing my opinion here. No.
Well, it's your podcast.
I might be totally wrong. I'd be interested to see what think. It might also be the case of I've been thinking about this one for a very long time, and I've probably put more thought into this one than a lot of the previous ones. And the fact that I've gone through the first two goddamn seasons where so many of the plots are just like, this is the obvious answer. And they do it, and you're like, okay, thank you. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
Well, I want to be nice because I want to come back and do a Deanna Troi's mom episode. Volunteering for that.
Absolutely. I don't know when she returns. It must be pretty soon. And I definitely want to have you back for The Defector.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that one.
Defector is season 3. I think it's somewhere in the middle of season 3.
Well, I figured that would be a good Clay episode because it's got an actor who's in X-Files a lot, and he's an X-Files guy.
Absolutely.
But whatever, yeah, I'd love to do that one.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for coming on, and thank you everybody out there for listening. If you enjoyed the content, you're on YouTube. Liking a comment's appreciated. If you enjoyed the content, you're on iTunes. A rating or review is always appreciated. You guys have anything, final thoughts, anything you want to plug before we sign off?
Well, Wes is kind enough to help me do a podcast on my favorite TV show, The Prisoner, which is from the 60s, a British sci-fi show, which you can find at backinthevillage.com or on Twitter, @prisonerpodcast. And I also do a webcomic online called Dead Meat, which you can find at eatdeadmeat.com.
And I have a movie coming out next year, humble brag.
It's a beautiful moon out there in wherever you are.
No, I write and draw comics. I work for DC. I do a book right now called Chrononauts, which you can buy in comic shops and on download online. Yep. It's going to be turned into a movie next year. Mostly I'm a Star Trek fan, and I Skype with Clay, and we hang out and drink beer a lot together. And next time I do this, I'd love to actually like be with you guys.
Yeah, definitely.
In Boston or whatever. So,
yeah, it would be. If people can't tell, we're obviously on Skype right now, and it's a little bit difficult talking on Skype. I always tend to talk over people. That's my failing, and when using Skype. But thank you guys. Thank you guys very much for helping me out with these. It's a lot better when I've got multiple people on here.
Thanks for having us.
Sure, makes me sound less insane.
I listen to all these. I really do enjoy these. I mostly listen just to help Clay out at first and tweet it, but I really do dig it. So.
To help me out, how?
Thanks.
To support you as my friend, fuckhead.
Oh, wait, is that all the notes that you've been giving me about my incorrect opinions on the episodes I've been on?
Those are notes about your incorrect inking.
Ooh.
And
I can only blame that on the teacher I had. So.
And Tana's out there getting a little sassy with you too, Clay, right?
I'm doing my Gainan Kung Fu stands at you right now, Clay.
We'll have to bring Tana, Sean, and Clay all back on at one point for a four-man pod, four-person pod, I guess, at that point.
There's one where Riker goes to a planet of he-she's or an androgynous race.
Yes, that's much later, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah. Right,
well...
In the 5 years when we get there. I forget what that one's called, but I will look that one up. I do remember that one.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's one of the only ones that ever talks about kind of homosexuality in a weird way.
Being as vague as possible about it.
Yeah,
and I just remember exactly. Frakes being, after it was made, he having a lot of talk about how he wanted it to be the actor to be a man instead of a woman, which is always nice to say after it's all been shot and you don't have to actually deal with the real world repercussions of what that would actually mean.
Well, not to go on a completely different tangent on this episode, but I've always thought it's really interesting that they never touch on that stuff. For a show that's all about equality and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, there's no gay people on the ship.
No.
They hardly, that seems to be the only time they ever talk about it.
Yep.
Isn't Q gay? I thought Q was gay.
Well, Q is whatever it wants to be.
In this episode, Q also says that the Borg are neither male nor female, and I seem to disagree with that because I can clearly identify them as male or female when they appear on screen.
You mean when that hot Borg woman shows up?
Yeah, when the Queen Borg. We won't talk about that, though.
Oh, right, yes.
For as great as the Borg are, they have a 3-episode run of being great, and that's kind of sad in a weird way.
Now, I can't remember exactly. Do they turn into basically a Doctor Who villain where they just keep coming back and getting worse every time?
Yes.
I mean, after Best of Both Worlds, anyway.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sean.
They started off like the hive mind thing is really amazing, but then they turn more and more into humans, which is not as helpful as
no.
you would imagine. They have emotions. They have like monologues
while
they're shooting at some point. They cry. They have nightmares. I mean,
they bring in a queen that they never particularly explain how the queen really works, if there are multiple queens or how it actually goes down.
Yeah, as much as I love First Contact, the queen thing has never really sat well with me as far as the concept of the Borg goes.
Well, it's kind of like in comics, it's like, how do you deal with a character like Juggernaut? You know, like you have to just come up with increasingly obtuse ways to cause him to just go away.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
you said, only 3 episodes and they started to hurt it. That's not, you could have gone a lot longer than that before you brought down the Borg.
Yeah.
Not in a good way, bringing them down.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking while I was watching this today, if they really wanted to shake everybody down for the next Star Trek movie, they should do the original Star Trek characters versus the Borg, because there's no reason they can't.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that would be well received or poorly received. I think the Trek fan base really sort of hates the new movies anyway, which is, I don't really agree with that. I don't care enough to get involved, but Yeah, it's, I don't know. It'll be interesting with the Fast the Furious director, you know, make it their action movies, whatever. They're not really Star Trek spirit, but they're action movies.
I'd love to see a car driving around the hallways of the Enterprise.
But, I mean, in Nemesis, the most reviled scene is when Picard, Worf, and Data are just driving around in that dune buggy.
Oh, right.
For no particular reason.
Dude, it's funny because I love that there's a car, and I love just those three going on an adventure with a Jeep with a gun on top. But I understand why it makes zero sense that they would have a wheel-based vehicle and they could just fly.
Q set a series of events into motion, bringing your contact with the Borg much sooner than it should have come. Now, perhaps when you're ready, it might be possible to establish a relationship with them. But for now, for right now, you're just raw material to them. Since they're aware of your existence...
They will be coming.
You can bet on it.
Maybe Q did the right thing for the wrong reason.
How so?
Well... perhaps what we most needed was a kick in our complacency to prepare us for what lies ahead.
You know what I was thinking?
Wes, with a gun on the back.
In between scenes, if you did like special podcasts where you just did one about the Borg, it just talked about the Borg in its entirety and like how they started. You sort of recap the whole thing, you know?
No, that's an awesome idea. I'd love to do that. And, I also spend a lot of time now just thinking about even like, if you don't even sort of go in canon and you just sort of come up with like, best away team, which is something I'm starting to think about a lot now. And I'm always interested in what people think would be the best away team to send to something. If you had like three spots, who would you send? Whatever it is. But thank you guys for listening. And, thank you guys again for coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank
all right, you so guys, much, guys, we will. I'll be back next time. What the fuck comes after the Samaritan Snare? I think that's how you pronounce it. And I'll see you guys later.